And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is new information and new perspective. Each of my guests is expanding our perspective with new information on his particular subject. My next guest is a former Capitol Hill staffer who has a unique perspective on the inner workings in Washington, D.C. We'll uncover his perspective on the Anthony Weiner resignation, as well as talk about what really happens behind closed doors in Washington. And if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question of my guest, you can call us at 639-0008. Rick Robinson has over 30 years' experience in politics and law, including a stint on Capitol Hill as legislative director and chief counsel to then-Congressman Jim Bunting, Republican from Kentucky. He has been active in all levels of politics, from advising candidates on a national level to walking door-to-door in city council races. He ran for the United States Congress back in 1998. He has several books. His latest book is titled Sniper Bid. Rick is a graduate of East Kentucky University and the Salmon P. Chase College of Law. He currently practices law in Fort Mitchell, Kentucky, as a partner in a law firm of Graydon, Head, and Ritchie, LLP. Rich and his wife live in Fort Mitchell with their three children and joining us from Kentucky. Hi, Rick. How are you today?
I am doing great, Bill. How are you doing?
I am doing terrific. All right. This whole Anthony Weiner thing, haven't we beaten it to death? But let's talk about it, because Anthony Weiner just resigned.
The
yes.
story just keeps on giving.
It does. And it's such an unfortunate name for the poor man in this situation. But he resigned from Congress last week. It was just an agonizing national sideshow about morals in the digital age, I think. But in what way are Anthony Weiner's actions characteristic of the narcissistic age in which we live in, Rick?
Well, I think that's exactly what happens. And you take a look at the people that live on Capitol Hill and that go to Capitol Hill. You know, Anthony Weiner didn't sit back 13 years ago, 14 years ago, and say, gosh, here's a way that I can get up one morning and embarrass myself and my entire family. It's the way that the city ends up changing people that adds to the exactly what you said, the narcissism of the members that go to Washington. They have staffs that wait on them. They have people that laugh at all their jokes. And suddenly they find themselves doing things that way they would have never thought about doing prior to their election to the United States Congress.
But presumably, Rick, these are intelligent people. That's how they get elected to the office. I mean, haven't there been enough sex scandals in Washington, D.C. for politicians to learn?
They really think they're going to get away with it. They really have. I mean, that's part of narcissism, is that they really believe they're higher than that. They're going to get away with it. Nobody's going to pay attention to this. Oh, it's just, you know, no one's going to catch me. Look at Gary Hart saying, well, if you think I'm fooling around, then follow me. Well, guess what? They did. You know, when my first book came out, my publisher was all upset because my first book involves actually a sex scandal. The Maximum Contribution, and when the book came out, it came out just right before it was going to come out. A sex scandal occurred on Capitol Hill, and my publisher was all upset, saying, oh, we could have capitalized on this. And I said, wait a minute, Kathy, it's Washington. There'll be another one. Don't worry.
Sage advice, Ricky, and you were absolutely right about that, whether it's John Edwards or Hart or anybody else along those lines. But what is it about people in power that really leads them to believe that they're above the law or above societal norms?
It's the rock star type of mentality that we put on them when they get to Washington, when they get to the point and they do have people that wait on them every day, people that provide information to them and elevate them above that. One of the things I really try to do in my book is to try to show how those members, when they get there, end up being somebody who tries to stay true to their norms. When I give a speech, the one that I always use is From Out Your Way, Duke Cunningham. Mm. I knew Duke Cunningham when he was first elected to Congress. And I look at the Duke Cunningham that is now sitting in the federal penitentiary, and I go, I don't know these two people. These two people aren't the same people.
Wow.
It's a guy who was changed by the city and his morals just happened to him. He evolved into this person who ended up being a bad person. And you know, unfortunately, it happens to people when they get into that situation. Barry Goldwater wrote a great chapter in his book Conscience of a Conservative in 1962 called The Perils of Power. and said the first thing that you need to do in electing somebody is elect somebody to office who is immediately willing to divest all the power that you've just given to him.
Very interesting. Now, my guest is Rick Robinson. Rick, we talked, my first guest, we talked about Watergate. It's the 40th anniversary of Watergate. And in the course of your work...
I wasn't there that night.
No, I'm not trying to make any inference that you were. So just let me be clear about that. But in the course of your work, though, you had the opportunity to interview two other Watergate convicted felons, Jeb Stuart Magruder, who was once the former White House staffer, and then he was the co-chairman of the committee to re-elect the president, and Chuck Colson, who was a special counsel to President Nixon. Now, interestingly enough to me, both of those men turned to religion as a result of the incident and, of course, their subsequent imprisonment. So what did you learn from your interviews with these two men that were central figures in the whole Watergate incident?
Well, first off, I didn't get a chance to interview Chuck Colson. I did spend personal time, though, with Jeb Magruder. And Jeb, if you take a look, if your callers or your listeners would like to go to the Daily Caller today, I've actually posted an article entitled the next call that Anthony Weiner needs to make is to Chuck Colson or Jeb Magruder. These are the two gentlemen in politics who can explain what power does to you, and not only go that far, but actually sit back and describe what it means to actually try to find redemption from the situation. These might be the guys who went to the ultimate depths of their own depravity, both having jail terms and then finding themselves later actually turning to religion and becoming ministers. Chuck Colson starting a jail ministry and Jeb Magruder becoming a Presbyterian minister. And I was lucky enough in my race for Congress in 1998 that I was having myself some moral concerns about the time that I was spending running for Congress, that I had a friend of mine set up a lunch with Jeb Magruder while he was a minister in Lexington, Kentucky. And the experience that I took away from it was absolutely phenomenal.
I mean, what was that experience?
Well, I detail it a little bit in the article, but when I sat down with Magruder, he immediately wanted to, the discussion went to power and how power does corrupt. And his point was that as now a man who has gone and gotten a degree in divinity and become a minister, that there's only one entity that holds power, and that is God. And that is, if you suddenly think you have power yourself, God has a funny way of showing you that you don't. And he uses it by his own example of saying that in 1973, he was the most powerful man in Washington, D.C. in January of 1973, and that he was chairman of Nixon's inaugural. If you wanted to be with Richard Nixon that night, you had to go through him. 2 months later, he was cooperating with prosecutors and couldn't get a return phone call. 17 months later, he was being released from jail, penniless, finding all that he had in his life as his only assets were his family and his faith. And that's where he started his rebuilding process. The thing that I found interesting about spending time with Magruder was that he was very, very frank about the mistakes he had made, about the allegiance that he gave to Richard Nixon, and the fact that he has said on numerous occasions, as he has gotten older, that Nixon knew about it going in. But they believed it was their duty to protect the president at the time.
Hmm. Now, isn't it the case, Rick, though, that with Magruder and Colson both, that they're prime examples of what the penal system is supposed to do? I mean, people went in, they were guilty, clearly. They were convicted by a jury of their peers, and they did their jail time. But they came out, they were contrite, they were repentant, and they moved on to serve in normal society once again. I mean, isn't that just a case example of the best things about our penal system?
If you read Chuck Colson's book from his jail term, Born Again, that's exactly what Colson will talk about. Colson actually converted prior to his the point where he pled guilty, and his conversion was that he didn't think he had committed a particular crime, but wanted to go in and bear all and say he had done this, that he had obstructed justice. You know, and Chuck Colson is probably the more interesting of the two for those of you, your listeners, who are political hacks like me, guys who really get into the day-to-day operations of it. He was Nixon's hatchet man. He was the guy behind the enemies list. He was the guy who, whether he said it or whether he was quoted as saying it or merely said to be that way, he was said to run over his own grandmother if it would have meant to reelect the President Nixon. And that's the type of guy he was before. Afterwards, he started a jail ministry and became one of the nation's leading lecturers on ethics. So, you know, here's a guy who, yeah, the experience changed him.
No doubt about it. My guest is Rick Robinson. He's the author of many books, but his most recent book is Sniper Bid, and he's got a new hot book, Manifest Destiny, we'll talk about just a little bit later. But let me ask you this, Rick. You're pretty good at predicting what's going to happen inside of the Beltway, and now that Anthony Weiner's on the outside of the Beltway, do you think he is going to find newfound religion as a result of this?
Well, I think Anthony Weiner is going to have to do, you know, going and this is what Colson points out in an article that he wrote recently, and I quote that in the article that I write in the Caller, is that, you know, going to a psychiatrist and laying on a couch basically isn't redemption. Publicly announcing that is just more narcissism in and of itself. I want to make myself better. Well, no, you actually go and do it by acts that you create, and I think the book on Anthony Weiner is yet to be written. But the fact of the matter is, if he really wants true redemption, he really should look to the lives of Jeb Magruder and Chuck Colson to see how it was done.
Now, the book on Weiner may yet to be written. However, there are important lessons that politicians can learn from this. And what would you say are the most important lessons coming out of this denial that Anthony Weiner had, and even the denial of Watergate, particularly in this Internet age? What lessons should politicians heed?
Well, in the Internet age, what they do, it kind of goes to the whole thing that you talk about in campaigns. Don't say anything, don't do anything, don't type anything that you don't want on the cover of the newspaper the next day. you need a really good spouse to keep you grounded. Apparently, this was a problem of Anthony Weiner's for quite some time, that his wife thought they had gotten under control. He kind of went off in the other direction with it, you know, but it's... You put it best. It's narcissism at its worst. You know, I guess the narcissist society looks at that and goes, "Wow, what a narcissist!" you know, he gives narcissist a bad name. finding some way to remain grounded. And the one thing that Jeb Magruder talked about when we had lunch was that Magruder said to me, he said, "You know, there really aren't any right answers in this world. There's only one person ever walked the earth that knew the right answers, and he's gone." What there really are, though, because of him being here, is that there are right questions. And as long as you find yourself asking the right questions about why you're doing things, then you'll be okay. It's when you start asking the wrong questions that you find yourself in trouble.
Good advice. Sound advice. My guest is Rick Robinson. And, Rick, I'm going to change gears completely. We're going to move away from the Anthony Weiner story and focus on you just a little bit more if we can. You are the author of
Brings out the narcissist in me. I appreciate that.
That's quite all right. I'm just playing to that part of you. But, you know, you're the author of several different books. However, most recently, one of your novels, Manifest Destiny, was optioned to Hollywood. So congratulations for that. Why will Manifest Destiny make a good Hollywood film?
Well, you know, one of the things that I've done in Manifest Destiny is that not only have the action that you want to see in a thriller, but also have arise some of those questions of morality that members of Congress and people that are involved in public affairs have to deal with. And I think that's one of the things that my readers in particular like to see the characters struggle with, is how they're going to deal with these moral issues and how they're going to deal with doing things that maybe they're not really all that proud of later, and how do they respond to that? How do they react to that? In Manifest Destiny, a young staffer is kidnapped in Romania while working on a foreign campaign over there, and kidnapped by Romanian rebels, communist rebels living in the Carpathian Mountains. And what will the congressman do to get him? To get this young man back? Well, maybe he'll do some things he's not real proud of later down the road.
Interesting. Now, how do you think Hollywood is going to pick up on the nuances of the moral issues that you present in that book?
Well, I've been very lucky in that the Pete Dial, who is the producer that's doing it, has so far attached some very good writers to the project. He's attached to Quinn Redeker, who is the got the story credit for the Deer Hunter.
Wow.
And I think that's exactly the type of moral issues and moral questions that that Manifest Destiny makes arise in the eyes of the viewer. And so I'm very happy that he's actually approached with it. And to be honest with you, I'm asking the same question. I wonder how he's going to bring apart that issue in the development of the storyline as he does the screenplay itself. But it is going to be something new for us. And I know my family and I get up every morning right now having trouble wiping the smile off our faces with having gotten a movie option for Manifest.
Well, that is exciting. My guest has been Rick Robinson, author of several books, Manifest Destiny, which was just optioned to Hollywood, and his most recent book, Sniper Bid. Rick, you also wrote that post on the Internet. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your writings, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Would love for them to come by to my website at authorrickrobinson.com. You can read my columns at the Daily Caller, and you can always pick up a copy of your own book on Amazon.
That is great. Or you can also get it at Bank of Books with two locations to serve you here in Ventura, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street. Rick, thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Billy. Appreciate it.
Take care.